WCRI's festival series highlights one of our community's greatest musical traditions, the Newport Music Festival. Since 1969, the Newport Music Festival has hosted over 2,000 concerts in Rhode Island's most prestigious venues, while presenting world-renowned and emerging classical music artists from around the globe. The Newport Music Festival has left an indelible mark on our music history here in Rhode Island, as well as around the world. Now, here's host Mike Mano, along with the festival's executive director, Pamela Pantos.
Hello, everyone. It's 1 week past our New Year's resolution time. And Pamela, how are you doing on New Year's resolutions?
I was going to ask you the same thing.
Well, I don't think I actually made any New Year's resolutions, believe it or not. I kind of missed it.
Oh, I made several, but they're a secret.
Oh, secret.
Yeah.
Oh.
Otherwise, I'm very superstitious. I think if I tell them, then they won't come true.
That's like a birthday wish. If you bought the candle, you can't tell anyone
exactly what
you wish for.
Exactly.
All right. Well, good luck to you on your resolutions.
Thank you.
I hope if they're good resolutions, I hope they all come true.
Well, thank you very much.
Most people don't have bad resolutions. So
I would hope not.
I guess they're safe. All right. Well, this is the Newport Music Festival series that we're talking about here on WCRI. Pamela Pantos is sitting with me. I'm Mike Mano, and we always have a wonderful time, mostly for me, getting educated about a lot of things I didn't know in the world of classical music. And Pamela is just a font, as they say, of wonderful knowledge. And so it's a great way to start the new year. We're 1 week into it. What do you have for us tonight?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Mike. It is a great pleasure to be here. I enjoy doing these different programs with you, as well as doing all the research and preparing all the materials. So again, thank you for this opportunity. At the sake of repeating myself, I'd like to tell our listeners one more time about our early ticket sales, which are going on January 29th. As a response to our loyal patrons and their requests, the Newport Music Festival has decided to change the ticketing process a bit. Namely, we are going to have reserved seating, and tickets will be on sale on January 29th, first online only at newportmusic.org. The reason we've moved to reserved seating is so that our patrons can go online, look at the programs, look at all the concerts. We have a new website to support all of this, and they will be able to select their seats, print out their tickets at home, pin them on their pin board, and have them ready from now all the way to July, and not have to worry about waiting in lines at the venues to get their favorite seat, but rather, you know, enjoy the summer. Go out, have a drink, go out to dinner, and then just drive up. As everyone knows, we have free seating at all, free parking at all of our venues. So everybody will be able to park and then just walk in leisurely to their favorite concert.
I think that's hugely important that people have the opportunity to pick the seat they like, because everybody has different preferences.
Absolutely.
Some people want to sit in the front, some want to be in the middle, some would like to be in the back. So here's your chance to not worry about it. Get them early.
Absolutely. So this evening, I thought that we would concentrate on one of the great French composers, namely Claude Debussy. 2018 marks the 100th anniversary of the composer's death, and on Wednesday, July 11th at 8 p.m. at the Breakers, the Newport Music Festival will perform an evening of this fascinating composer's pieces. The evening will begin with the song cycle entitled Chanson de Bilitis, which appears to be like any other short set of three songs. However, this set has a very interesting history. The poems of these songs are taken from a much larger set of pieces of works written by Pierre Louis. He entices the reader with this detailed autobiography of this author, a Greek courtesan living in the 6th century BC. And the poems are supposed to be all about Bilitis and the events of her life. And taken as a whole, they create this narrative, you know, that's quite fascinating. She even has a stint in the city of Mytilini on the island of Lesbos, which is where my ancestors come from. So I found this quite fascinating. However, many readers believe that the poems had been collected and then translated from Greek by Louis. Bilitis is a fictional character. Louis made the whole thing up. But nonetheless, even after people found this out, the Chansons de Bilitis were a great success, and they established Louis as an eminent literary figure. So the appearance of these songs at the festival is a slightly different scenario than this original composition, as they're not being performed with piano, but rather with a string quartet arranged by Jake Heggie. Jake Heggie is our living composer in residence this summer. And this is very exciting for the festival. I think it's very important for the evolution of this art form that we present living composers, you know, not just people who have lived in the past. Jake has planned an incredible concert of his own works for Sunday, July 8th at 11 a.m. at the Newport Museum, at the Newport Art Museum. And what's wonderful about that is he's going to present his compositions, talk, and even do a Q&A. So people are going to be able to ask probably the most preeminent opera living opera composer today about his works, which is so exciting for the festival.
Fabulous opportunity.
He will also appear in concert with the great mezzo-soprano, Friederike von Stade, at the Breakers at their concert on Saturday, July 7th at 8 p.m. Both of these concerts are generously sponsored by Susanna and John Laramie, and we cannot thank them enough for, you know, supporting us in the manner in which that we can bring, you know, one of the greatest living singers alive today, as well as Jake Heggie, this incredible composer. And they're both excited about coming back. Just for a little tidbit, mezzo-soprano Friederike von Stade appeared at the second year of the festival in 1970.
Wow. So she's over 25.
She is, and still singing so incredibly well. She opened the Boston Symphony Orchestra, their winter series this year, singing absolutely like an angel. And her concert, which we'll talk about another time, but it's quite autobiographical. So she gets up on stage and she sings one of these great pieces of music and then talks about what it meant to her or how she worked with the composer. And that evening is going to be one that people will remember forever, quite literally. It's going to be phenomenal.
Definitely sounds like a can't miss.
Absolutely. So Jake Heggie arranged the Chanson de Bilitis four-string quartet. It will be the American premiere of these pieces, and this follows on the heels of the world premiere of these pieces because he created them for his friend, the amazing mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato. So again, you know, like we have these composers who hung out together. Here we have all of these great composers and musicians and singers hanging out together. So Joyce just performed and premiered these pieces at Wigmore Hall in London. As I said, the world premiere, and we get to have the American premiere.
Wow. All right.
Very exciting. So we're so fortunate to be able to hear these Trois Chansons de Bilitis by Friederike von Stade. She's going to sing these for us with Martin Katz on piano. I'm going to give our audience and listeners just a brief synopsis of these three pieces, and then we'll hear these gorgeous works. So the first piece is called The Panpipes, and she talks about the fact that this Greek god Pan appeared to her and gave her a syrinx, a set of pipes made for her. And he teaches her to play, and she says in the poem, "We sit so close that we have nothing to say to one another, but our songs want to converse, and our mouths are joined as we take turns on the pipes." The second piece is called The Hair, namely her hair, and he says, "I had a dream that your hair was round around my neck. It was like a black necklace round around my nape and on my chest." And so it's a very erotic, very intimate song. The third song, quite appropriate to this time of the year, is called The Tomb of the Water Nymphs. She talks about the fact that she's walking in these frost-covered woods and that her feet are heavy with snow. He asked, namely again the Greek god Pan, what she was looking for. And she said that she was following the tracks of the satyr, and his little cloven footprints were in the snow, and he says, "But they're dead. They're dead, and the nymphs are dead too." And he breaks the ice of the spring where the water nymphs used to laugh, and he picked up a large cold slab of ice and held it towards the pale sky. Very poetic, very beautiful. And again, we'll listen to these three songs that are so stunningly beautiful, the poetry as well as the songs sung by Friederike von Stade and played by Martin Katz. Thank you.
We are back on WCRI's special presentation of the Newport Music Festival series. And Pamela Pantos is here. I'm Mike Mano, and we're going to get right back to it.
So let's talk a little bit about this interesting composer. Claude Debussy, his full name was Achille. Claude Debussy was born in 1862 in Saint-Germain, and he died in March of 1918 in Paris. What was remarkable about Debussy is he developed a highly original system of harmony. And in many ways, it mirrors what the Impressionists and the Symbolist painters and the writers of his time were doing. So Debussy, again, one of these child prodigies. He was gifted as a pianist, and by the age of 9, he was already composing. He entered the Paris Conservatory, where he studied piano and composition, and he won in 1884 the Grand Prix de Rome. His youth was spent in great turbulence. He was overwhelmed by situations of extremes, material and emotional. He was living with his parents and in this poverty-stricken suburb of Paris. And suddenly, this Russian millionairess takes him, von Meck, takes him under her wing. So she engaged him to play duets with her and her children, and he traveled with her, you know, to her palatial residences throughout Europe during his summer vacations. So he had these extremes going on in his life, and you hear it in his music. Debussy was quite the ladies' man, and he had numerous affairs. It was in this early period of him sowing, sort of, you know, finding himself, that he wrote the Chanson de Bilitis around 1896. The next piece that we're going to hear is Debussy's only string quartet, which he also wrote from this period. It was not easy going for him, and Debussy wrote to a colleague of his, "I think I can finally show you the last movement of the quartet, which has made me really miserable."
Of course, why not? Right.
So it's quite classical in its four-movement form, But again, this distinctive feature of his writing is his preoccupation with timbre, with sonority, with the sound of things. This work is groundbreaking, and it is considered one of the seminal impressionistic works in the string quartet genre. When you listen to it, it doesn't sound like anything that came before. And another very interesting aspect of this work is that Debussy provides all of the different themes and the melodies for the entire string quartet in the first movement, almost like he couldn't contain himself, right? And he had to get them out. He had to get it out, exactly. Right. So he presents them all, and then he takes his time and elucidates each one of them throughout the piece. He sold the score for a mere 250 francs to the publishers, Durand-Ancy, who, as he later recalled, were cynical enough about it to freely admit that what they were paying for, or paying me, didn't cover all the labor of this work. I mean, they knew they were getting an incredible deal, but again, he did not have the name at the time, you know, to be able to demand more. So not surprisingly, because the quartet was so groundbreaking and avant-garde, it was widely misunderstood at its premiere given by the Isaïe Quartet on December 29th in 1893. So I found a recording of this piece played by the current configuration of the Isaïe Quartet. Yes, they have the same name as the quartet that premiered this work live in concert over 100 years ago. So I love this recording not only because of the connection to the debut of the piece, but also because I believe that a high-quality live recording gives us the sense of truly being in the room. So let's listen to the first movement of Debussy's string quartet.
Thank you.
Welcome back to WCRI's presentation of the Newport Music Festival Series with Pamela Pantos. And Pamela, let's pick it up where we left off.
As a holder of the Grand Prix de Rome, Debussy was given a 3-year stay at the Villa Medici in Rome, where it was supposed to be ideal conditions and he could pursue his creative work. What was really nice is for the first time he didn't have to really worry about money, but he felt quite stymied there, believe it or not, and he fled from the Villa Medici after 2 years and returned to Paris. And because he now had some money, he lived a life of extreme indulgence. It was during this period that he wrote his piano sonata, L'Île Joyeuse, and I think given the weather today, many of us would be happy to escape to a happy little island, as the title is somewhere. This piece, the L'Île Joyeuse, was inspired by Watteau's painting, in which a happy group of revelers depart for a mythical island in the Mediterranean, which is the birthplace of Venus. So he already had, you know, a visual to work from. The painting shows the ships that was used for the journey, and there are these little cupids, and there's a statue of Venus. The other implication also in the title, because he uses the English spelling of the word island, île, is the Channel Island of Jersey. In 1904, he actually escaped to that island with Emma Bardac, who became his second wife, and he revised this piece there. So there's a lot of visual influences, painting influences here. This whole piece is a journey to the island, so I will leave it to the imagination of our listeners to hear the waves and the wind as we make our way to this happy island. We are going to listen to a recording of the great Vladimir Horowitz play L'Île Joyeuse, which was one of his favorite encores.
Thank you.
beautiful music. Certainly an amazing talent playing the piano right there, I'll tell you. That's one of the more world's famous pianists. And let's get to the end of this program and try to tell us a little bit more about this amazing talent that wrote all this material.
One of the things, you know, Mike, that we really need to remember is what was going on in the world and the incredible artistry and composition that was going on. The main musical influence on Debussy was, believe it or not, Richard Wagner, because he believed in this idea of Gesamtkunstwerk, which really means the whole piece. You know, Wagner wrote his own lyrics, he did his own orchestration, he did it from beginning to end. And that influenced Debussy, who really tried in his own way, in a very French manner nonetheless, to create a complete piece. He was also influenced by the Russian composers Borodin and Mussorgsky. He very much embraced French Impressionism, as we said, and even English pre-Raphaelite painters. Debussy's career was only 25 years long. As we said earlier, he died quite young. However, he was constantly groundbreaking. In 1905, Debussy's illegitimate daughter, Claude Emma, was born. He had divorced his first wife, who had tried to commit suicide over his numerous affairs, and he subsequently married his daughter's mother, Emma Bardac. They were repelled by the gossip and the scandal arising from this situation, so he and his family sought refuge on the south coast of England. In his later years, it is the pursuit of illusion that really that you really see in Debussy's instrumental writing, especially this otherworldly cello sonata, which is the last piece of our program today. If you listen to this whole sonata, which is in three movements, this instrument takes on, like a chameleon, it becomes a violin, a flute, and even the mandolin. It gets plucked. It gets played in ways that I think were truly people had not heard before. And so we really need to consider how otherworldly and avant-garde Debussy was. So much so that during the last part of his life, he created an alter ego whom he called Monsieur Croche.
Okay. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
He actually carried on imaginary conversations with this Monsieur Croche on the nature of art and music. Monsieur Croche, as he wrote once, "What is the use of your almost incomprehensible art? Is it not more profitable to see the sunrise than to listen to the Pastoral Symphony of Beethoven?" And then in another conversation, Monsieur Croche supports music. "I am less interested in what I possess than in what I shall need tomorrow." So again, this is such insight into this composer, and you will hear this in the cello sonata. In his last works, the piano pieces that Debussy had branched out into really developed later, you know, into what we hear in Stravinsky and Béla Bartók. And it's quite sure, we're quite sure that he would have taken part in leading movements in composition following the years of the First World War, had his life not been tragically cut short by cancer. So we will end our program today with the poignant first movement of Debussy's cello sonata, here played by Lynn Harrell and Vladimir Ashkenazy, which has all of the sweetness and the melancholy of Debussy's works and life.
Thank you, Pamela, and we'll see you next time on WCRI's presentation of the Newport Music Festival.
Thank you.
thank you for listening to WCRI's Festival Series featuring the Newport Music Festival. For more information on the festival, special seasonal concerts, to purchase tickets, or to donate, call 849-0700 or visit newportmusic.org.